It's baffled scholars for two millennia. It is a puzzle made of multidimensional elements, an enigma with roots that reach back to the dawning of time, perhaps before. Daniel explained part of it. Ezekiel and Isaiah had glimpses into it. John saw it all for the time of the end. That time is now. Join Derek and Sharon Gilbert on a journey that spans the course of history, from Eden to Mount Hermon, from Hermon to Babel, from Babel to Rome, from Rome to the cross, and from there to us. Biblical prophecy is coming true before your eyes, and to understand it, you must discern the times both then and now. It's time to unravel the threads of this all-encompassing prophetic paradox. It's time to unravel Revelation.
Welcome to Unraveling Revelation from Skywatch TV. I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. I just hopped over towards Derek. I don't know if you saw it on camera or not, but if you didn't, forget it. Forget I even said it. But welcome to, a November edition of Unraveling Revelation. And finally, we're going to get back to the book of Revelation.
Yeah, we've been spending several weeks, 6 weeks or so, just on the nature of Satan, what we know about Satan from the scriptures, what we can speculate about and infer from his character based on the clues in the Bible. But this week we're going to get back to Revelation and try to interpret what we read in Revelation 12, and then finally move ahead to Revelation 13 in a topic that everybody wants to discuss, and that is the nature of the beast.
Everybody. That and the woman. She's coming up,
yes,
too. So many things to talk about. But, we have discussed Satan in so many ways, and that's why I'm glad, if we've already covered this, forgive us, because we've lost track. We need a long list of where we've been, but I told Derek, even if we've already covered Revelation 12, which I think we have, I wanted to go back to it because now we have context.
Yes, yes.
We have a little bit of background on Satan now.
Mm-hmm. We understand now that Satan seems to have transformed somewhat, or his character changed, or perhaps he revealed himself during the first century. Maybe that's the better way of putting it.
I think that's a really good idea, good way to put it. But I told you this morning that you ever have one of those moments where you're thinking about a Bible verse or a concept or a description in the Bible, and suddenly you go, oh my gosh, I never thought of that. Had one of those epiphanies this morning. Don't know what it really means. But it occurred to me that John, in describing, because he's very detailed, in describing the throne room and what it looks like, who's there, what they're saying, how they behave.
Mm-hmm.
You do not see the accuser of the brethren.
No, that's true. And he's a character that we see in the throne room of God in the Old Testament in a couple of locations.
And he's mentioned here.
Sure. The book of Job and Zechariah, we've talked about that, where he's first accusing Job, and then in Zechariah he is accusing the high priest Joshua.
And he's called up so he can come and go.
Right. He's there when the sons of God present themselves to the Lord, and Satan is among them. But here in Revelation 12, he's there, but he's described in a very different way. Behold, a great red dragon.
Well, why don't we start with verse 1, and we'll just read through this and
see
what we can glean from this.
Revelation 12, beginning at verse 1. And a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars.
Okay, I want to stop for a minute because Mike Heiser has talked about this sign.
Right.
And we've also discussed it on this program as well. So if you're new to watching Unraveling Revelation, just for background, Mike Heiser, he asserts that this sign appeared in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
In 3 BC.
And this is the based on the work of Dr. E.L. Martin in his book, The Star That Astonished the World, arguing that these signs were fulfilled in a sequence in about 3 BC, where contrary to what we heard last year, last December, when there was the great conjunction of the planets Saturn and Jupiter, which they called the Christmas star.
I just realized my Kleenex was there. Everybody's covered. Oh, no, it's because my nose is running.
The Christmas star was not the conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn.
It was not, but there's a reason why it was billed that way.
Sure. The secular world would like us to think it was just a natural occurrence and no big deal, nothing
but
to see here, just
that,
move on.
I think the secular world is that setting us up, the fallen realm is setting up the world to believe the Antichrist is Christ.
Absolutely. And that was part of the thesis behind my forthcoming book, which should be out very, very shortly, The Second Coming of Saturn. But the signs that Dr. E.L. Martin put together, and Mike is in agreement here, doesn't agree with all of Martin's theology, but on this he thinks that the research is sound, that there were a series of signs in that led up to September 11th of 3 BC, one being the conjunction of Jupiter and in the constellation Virgo, meaning with the planet Venus representing Inanna or Ishtar or Astarte. So then you had this the king star Jupiter, the king of the pantheon for the pagan world, the Roman world, in the womb, as it were, of the constellation Virgo, and then later meeting with Regulus in the constellation Leo.
Which is the king star in Leo.
The king star in Leo, right. So based on that, the astrologers, the wise men looking for the sign of a coming king would have seen a birth is coming because of the Jupiter-Virgo, Jupiter-Venus conjunction, and then the Jupiter-Regulus conjunction. The king will be born, and but then there was something miraculous that led the wise men to the manger in Bethlehem. There was not just, because if you saw the conjunction of those two planets last year, it was interesting, but it was not spectacular enough to cause guys to wander all the way across the desert in following this sign, especially because the sign, according to the Gospel of John, was in the east. It was in the opposite direction.
Yes, I know.
So
they're heading west. You can't follow a star in the east if you're heading west.
Exactly right. Anyway, this was fulfilled. And I know a few years ago there were some who thought that this was to be fulfilled, but this was fulfilled in the year 3 BC.
Because this is Jesus.
Exactly.
Forget the fact that we've got pagan imagery in the heavens. The Lord tells us that they are there for signs and seasons.
Right.
Signs and seasons.
And so this woman who represents Israel, she was pregnant, was crying out in birth pains and the agony of giving birth. And another sign appeared in heaven. Behold, a great red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns, and on his heads 7 diadems.
So
and we'll see shortly.
Yeah. In heaven. So if the one is in the stars, then you would think that the other one is also in the stars.
Yes.
The constellation Draco.
Yeah.
Covers about a third of the viewable starscape.
Right, right. And, you know, it wasn't all that long ago, relatively speaking, in terms of Earth hit time, geologic time, that Alpha Draconis was the pole star.
Right.
I mean, we're just so used to Polaris, the, you know, brightest star in the Little Dipper, being the North Star that we assume it's always been so. But because of the rotation of the Earth precession, that changes slowly, but it changes. And in the time of Abraham, about 4,000 years ago, Alpha Draconis, the alpha star in Draco the dragon, was the North Star. So what was John seeing here? That, I don't know. And I think that what John is describing here clearly is a sign of something that was taking place in heaven. Because instead of describing the accuser in heaven, we see later in verse 9 that he identifies this dragon as Satan.
Yes, well, let's read on.
Another sign appeared in heaven. Behold, a great red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns, and on his heads 7 diadems. His tail swept down a third of the stars of heaven and cast them to the earth, and the dragon stood before the woman who was about to give birth, so that when she bore her child, he might devour it.
Interesting that we get, it's really tempting to get bogged down into verb tense. It's past tense here, therefore it happened in the past, our past. It's present tense, therefore it's happening now. It's futures, therefore it... You can't do that.
When God is outside of time and the prophets are being pulled from our three-dimensional plus our linear conception of time into a realm in which time may be fluid, it may have no meaning as far as we know it, as far as we understand it, and trying to understand it and explain it to other people limited by three spatial dimensions and linear time really a challenge.
We know that John is in heaven after the risen Savior arrives. Therefore, he's looking into his own past.
Right.
At the birth of that Savior. And who these stars are, because the stars of heaven refers to angels. And if he sweeps them down, then they become fallen angels. And the fact that he's sweeping them means that he's responsible for leading them astray. And yet, free will, they did it.
Yes. And as we discussed in 2 weeks ago, Satan has his own angels. Second Second Corinthians, we learn that he's got his own messengers or angelos or what have you. So these may be those that Paul was describing in that letter.
Possibly.
Just taking this whole section in context, let me go a couple more verses. Then I want to back up to verse three there. She gave birth to a male child, one who is to rule all the nations with a rod of iron. But her child was caught up to God and to his throne, and the woman fled into the wilderness, where she has a place prepared by God in which she is to be nourished for 1,260 days. Now, verse 3, seven heads, 10 horns, and on his heads, seven diadems.
Yeah.
Now, we've talked before about the imagery of dragons in ancient Mesopotamia and the idea of the concept, the image of a seven-headed dragon that had to be overcome by a warrior god in order to bring the natural world into being. Mm-hmm. Leviathan is described as a multi-headed serpent, and we know from Mesopotamian myths, the Mesopotamian stories of Yam, who had to be defeated by Baal, Tiamat defeated by Marduk or Enlil or Anu, depending on who and when the story was being told. Ninurta with Bashmu.
Mm-hmm.
It was a seven-headed serpent that had to be defeated. And,
or dragon.
Right.
Entity of some kind.
Yeah. And so this is not an uncommon image. This would have been a very familiar image in the days of John. But this is not the chaos monster, the chaos serpent. That, I believe, is the beast that we see in Revelation 13.
What's interesting, though, about the beast in Revelation 13 is its earthly reflection of what we see in the heavens.
Yes, and also very clearly a reflection, an echo of what Daniel described in Daniel chapter 7. The four beasts of Daniel are what comprise the beast that we call the Antichrist in Revelation 13. What we don't understand clearly, and I've been looking to find somebody who's made some really good arguments for how we interpret this, the 10 horns on the seven heads of Satan and the seven diadems. Now, the diadems are crowns of royalty. We discussed that way back in Revelation 6. We talked about the four horsemen of the apocalypse and the first rider wearing the Stephanos crown, which is the crown of victory, not to be confused with the crown of royalty. We see in Revelation 19, the rider on the white horse, which is the Messiah, the returning Christ, wearing many diadems. Here, Satan is given seven diadems and 10 horns.
The question is, what do the horns represent?
That's the question. And I have not found a good, compelling argument for for any of these explanations.
The only other sort of parallel to this idea that there are 10 of them is that we've got 10 kings later on who are waiting for their kingdoms.
Yes.
And I believe those are probably spirit kings.
And I think you're exactly right there, because that also is a callback to Daniel chapter 7, where the horns are described as kings. The question is, which kings, which kingdoms? And I think you're right. I think that we make a mistake in trying to identify them as earthly kings and kingdoms instead of spiritual rulers. These, I think, are the minions of Satan in his rebellion. These may be the other major deities worshipped in ancient Mesopotamia.
Oh, that could be.
And that's just a guess. That is just, we're speculating here because the Bible's not explicit on this, but we are dealing with a spiritual enemy here. And I think if we try to nail it down and say, okay, it's got to be Rome and Russia and the Ottoman Empire and what have you, I think we're not looking at the right target.
There may be interpretations that work with that, and it could be that that's part of the nuance here, but when the Lord gives information, it is so multi-layered, and part of the reason for that sort of obscurity is to veil it from the fallen realm.
Yes, exactly. God is the greatest general in all of history, and he's not going to reveal his plans until the enemy sees him on the other side of the battlefield.
So more on this after the other side of the break?
Yes, and possibly we talk about Petra.
Yes.
More straight ahead as Unraveling Revelation continues.
With the official disclosure of UFOs moving full steam ahead, very few will be prepared for what is coming. the answers are now available in Josh Peck's groundbreaking new Skywatch Films documentary DVD, over 10 years in the making, entitled The Great Delusion, The Second Coming of Earth's Oldest Enemy, along with Dr. Thomas Horn's documentary-style expose on DVD, Rome and the Star God, and the late Chris Putnam's Vatican presentation on DVD, Astrobiology and the Vatican ET Connection. Josh Peck's new documentary, The Great Delusion, reveals for the first time why the Vatican is in possession of a telescope named the Lucifer Device, why the ancient and mysterious Anasazi suddenly disappeared from the historic record, how alien abductions might be connected to the sixth chapter of the Book of Genesis, whether there is a secret alien-human hybridization program being conducted on Earth right now, if there is a connection between aliens and supernatural entities such as demons and fallen angels, and what we can do to prepare for what's ahead. You'll also see stunning reports on the UFO phenomenon by Dr. Thomas Horn, Josh Peck, L.A. Marzulli, Timothy Alberino, Nick Pope, Chris Putnam, Chuck Misler, and many more. You'll also receive Dr. Thomas Horn's documentary-style expose, Rome and the Star God, on DVD. Join Dr. Horn for this incredible expose on how the Vatican is not only willing to accept our alien brothers with open arms, but are actually enabling the arrival of the end-time Star God, the Antichrist. But that's not all. We're also including the late Chris Putnam's shocking presentation entitled Astrobiology and the Vatican ET Connection on DVD, detailing the Vatican's plans to baptize aliens upon their arrival, and how contemporary societies will soon look to the aliens to be the saviors of humankind. Sold separately, these items have a retail value of $75. Yours now for your donation of only $35 plus shipping and handling while supplies last. Prepare for full disclosure with the Great Delusion special offer. Available now at SkywatchTVStore.com. Order now or call 1-844-750-4985.
Here are the upcoming conferences and events featuring the team from Skywatch TV. For a full list and complete information, log on to skywatchtv.com/events or download our free mobile app for iOS and Android devices and Amazon Kindle Fire tablets. We have links to the app stores posted at skywatchtv.com.
Welcome back to Unraveling Revelation from Skywatch TV. I'm Derek Gilbert.
I am Sharon Gilbert, and we've got our tea. If you're sitting there with your favorite beverage, we would love to invite you to go to Israel with us and Jordan, which will take you to Petra, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit, in fact. And I think if you go to Petra, you're going to understand what we're going to tell you even better, because it's so obvious when you're there. But our plan at this moment, as we record this, is to go in March of 2022. Derek just sent off an email to Aaron Lipkin this morning. We're going to have a conversation in the next few days. We're going to make a decision as to whether or not March 2022 is still a possibility.
Yeah. We're aware that the nation, that Israel's tourism ministry right now is requiring all visitors from overseas to be vaccinated. And we understand that there are many of you. We're not eager to be vaccinated either.
But we're, you know what? We're not.
We're not anti-vaccine.
We're careful.
Yeah.
We
just want more data. It may come down to this. This may be, I like the way our friend Messianic Rabbi Eric Walker put this. It's the down payment you pay to see the Holy Land.
Exactly.
So we're going to make a decision on that soon, because we don't want to make this a choice. If we can avoid this choice, or asking you to make that choice, we will.
We will, indeed.
But we'll keep you posted.
We will, indeed. And if you take the extension to Jordan, you're going to be very happy you did. And possibly in October of 2022, we're hoping to go to Turkey. Again, if things open up there in a way that we know that we can take a group of 12 to 15.
It'll be a small group. This will be a much smaller tour than we typically will take to Israel. This will be our first time going to Turkey, and so we want to keep it relatively small.
About 10% of the size.
Yeah. But the sites that we've outlined, and the tour company, which is owned by an author that we've come to know and respect, Doug Hershey, author of the book Israel Rising and Jerusalem
Great
Rising.
Book.
Yep.
Great books.
They have outlined an itinerary that would include all of the churches of Revelation, plus some additional sites of historic interest like Göbekli Tepe, which secular archaeologists call the world's oldest temple. But our friends, Dr. Aaron Judkins and Dr. Judd Burton, have just finished a book. We're waiting for the publication date, but it's on the Watcher's influence, the angelic influence on Göbekli Tepe, the argument being that it existed prior to the flood. And they look at the evidence that's been uncovered there. So that would be on the tour. We'll keep you posted on that as details get finalized. But that looks like a definite possibility for later in 2022. Well, Petra, one of the reasons this is so interesting is that this has been put forward by a number of respected...
Well, read the verses first.
Well, yeah, let me read the verses. So back to verse 6, "And the woman fled into the wilderness where she has a place prepared by God in which she is to be nourished for 1,260 days."
A place prepared by God in the wilderness.
Yeah, and this is a place that some very respected prophecy scholars have put forward as the place, Petra, that is. Arnold Fruchtenbaum, and in fact, I'm looking at a paper that was written by Dr. Tommy Ice of the Pre-Trib Research Center. We had the opportunity, the blessing really, to meet at a couple of the Prophecy Watchers conferences.
He's incredible.
He really is. Arnold Fruchtenbaum wrote, quote, "Petra is located in a basin with Mount Seir and totally surrounded by mountains and cliffs. The only way in and out of the city is through a narrow passageway that extends for about a mile and can only be negotiated by foot or by horseback. This means the city is easy to defend. Petra is shaped like a giant sheep fold, with its narrow passage opening up to a spacious circle surrounded by cliffs. The city of Basra in Mount Seir is located in ancient Edom or southern Jordan. Since this area will escape the domination of the Antichrist, it is logical for the Jews to flee to this place. Thus, God will provide a city of refuge outside the Antichrist's domain for the fleeing remnant." Now, if the Antichrist takes over Israel, and you can make that case based on Daniel chapter 11, the last five or six verses of Daniel 11, you know, Jordan, or rather Edom, will escape dominion, then you've got this opportunity here. You've got the evidence here to suggest that Petra will be where the remnant will be protected and preserved.
I think so, too. And Jesus tells his disciples, when you see these things happening, and he's talking about the beginnings of terrible things and the desolation of the abomination of desolation, which we believe takes place in the midway point of that final seven-year period before Christ's return, that he says, run. Don't even grab your coat. Just run.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that the remnant is going to run or flee or possibly fly to Petra.
Right. And that is hinted at in verses 13 and 14. When the dragon saw that he'd been thrown down to the earth, he pursued the woman who had given birth to the male child. But the woman was given the two wings of the great eagle so that she might fly from the serpent into the wilderness to the place where she is to be nourished for a time and times and half a time. The serpent poured water like a river out of his mouth after the woman to sweep her away with a flood. But the earth came to the help of the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed the river that the dragon had poured from his mouth.
You and I have talked about this many times, that if you are in Petra, in that very narrow seek, that any waterfall, spring and in the fall, that there are certain areas that it becomes like a river and you will drown.
Yeah, they warn you not to go through the small seek, which is an alternate way to get into the city.
It's shorter.
Yeah, more dangerous. You got to climb over a bunch of rocks and stuff. But it was a channel that was cut by the Nabataeans 2,000 years ago to divert floodwater away from the city and through this channel. So anytime there's rain within 30 miles or so of Petra, they tell you don't go in the small seek because you could die.
This is the cleft of the rock. This is cleft of Petra, the rock. And it is an amazing area that's already set to has cisterns in there that will catch any rainfall. It has a system set up with troughs that will collect all of the water. Any little drop that comes down the side of the mountain gets caught in that. So it is a great place to raise some crops, to keep your animals, to go back to the old ways of living and survive for 3.5 years.
Right. It's the kind of thing that the Israelites did when they moved into the land in the first place, and they've been doing since they moved back into the land since 1948. Mm-hmm. The desert is literally blooming because they're back to some of these old practices of conserving water, conserving soil. The Nabataeans were masters of this 2,000 years ago in and around ancient Petra, and it is clear from soil samples that there was a lot of agriculture that was taking place there. You wouldn't guess it now, looking at how dry it is, but that was the case back then. That may well be why Petra is significant.
It may be, and you and I've talked. We've been in there, and you need to go with us.
Yes,
there are rocks that are just barely hanging on. They've been almost cleaved all the way down. They've got about this much left to go. A tiny, tiny push from the Lord, and it will completely seal off that seek.
Block the entrance. Mm-hmm. Now, you might say, well, okay, but today with modern drone technology and so forth, it's not like it was in the old days where you would block the entrance to some place and people coming in on foot or horseback wouldn't be able to get to you. But now with modern technology, with drones, with aircraft, helicopters, so forth.
Good luck getting around the hand of God if he has his hand over them protecting him.
Exactly.
They will be hidden.
Exactly. And there are plenty of places in Petra to hide where you are really, really out of sight. The Nabataeans built their homes inside the rocks. Mm-hmm. And who knows? I mean, you know, with modern technology, maybe an EMP takes all those electronic devices out of the equation.
Wouldn't that be interesting?
Yeah. But the question that we have not yet answered, and I don't know whether there is an answer, who are those 10 horns and the 7 diadems? And as we'll see, interestingly, in Revelation 13, the beast actually has more diadems. The beast has 10 diadems. So John didn't put these facts in there at random.
No.
But the question is, what do they represent? And the answer is, we can't be sure.
We can't be sure. So next week, we'll have to start pretty much at the same spot. But I want to cover exactly when Satan is thrown down.
That's a really good question. Coming back to where we started this week, the nature of Satan, the way he's described, the way he was understood by Jewish religious scholars and even the early church, was not the way we understand him today. But I think what we see here in Revelation 12 is perhaps the reason why his role changed. His ambition came out in the first century as he tried to destroy the Messiah. Once he realized, the Messiah is here and he's fully human, he's vulnerable now. Mm-hmm. Now I can get him. And as Jesus told his followers, his disciples, that Satan had a kingdom, which was not how he was depicted in the Old Testament. He was simply the one who showed up in the heavenly court and said, I've got something on this guy over here. Mm-hmm. And by the time we get to Revelation, John is depicting him in a different way. And the way he was understood, the way he was taught, the way we understand him today, very different, because clearly now Satan is the leader, the ruler of a kingdom. Jesus described him as the God of this world, the prince of this world, and did not rebuke him when he offered the kingdoms of the world to Jesus if Jesus just bowed the knee. So he transformed somehow, or his ambition got the better of him somehow. When was he thrown down, though? When was he denied access to the throne?
I think that's a really good question. And again, you can't go by tense, and you can't go by the fact that it's all in the same verse, because the Old Testament got the first century Jews confused about that.
Absolutely. They were looking for someone different, and that's why they rejected him. Sadly, that's why many of them still reject him to this day. Pray for them. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. And thank you for watching. This is Unraveling Revelation from Skywatch TV.
Unraveling Revelation is part of Skywatch TV, a viewer-supported ministry. To learn more about Skywatch TV and the work of our sister ministry, Whispering Ponies Ranch, please visit our website, skywatchtv.com.